am Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and this week I wanted to talk about books we read as kids. I just thought that would be fun. Nice nostalgic episode here in Good Story 386.
Yeah.
So we listed it. We each picked a book that meant something to us as youngsters, and I picked Dolphin Island by Arthur C. Clarke, and you picked A Little Princess by, I don't have the name written in front of me. Who wrote that?
Frances Hodgson Burnett.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
And my copy has pictures by Tasha Tudor.
Ooh.
I don't know if you know who she is, but the pictures are amazing. Oh, well, she was an illustrator of a lot of children's books back in the day, and her pictures are exquisite.
Oh, that's fun. So, yeah.
If you come across them.
So, yeah, yours was written in 1905.
Wow.
And mine was 1963.
Oh, both so good.
Both so very good. Yes, I enjoyed A Little Princess very much. That was a cool little story. Yeah.
Yeah, and I truly loved Dolphin Island. I was surprised.
Oh, I'm so
I
glad.
Read it in 2 days and could not put it down.
Oh,
and
man.
Yeah. Loved the things that kind of, reading it as an adult, that it told me about the author.
Oh, interesting. I'm very interested to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. Yeah. So that book, I have a flashbulb memory of reaching up for this book in the elementary school library at school and finding it on the shelf and checking it out and then reading that thing, and it changed everything. It was not like the first book I read, right? But that was the first one I read when I realized what this could be, you know what I mean?
Oh,
I was like,
interesting.
Goodness gracious. I mean, this was way above the other stuff I was reading.
Oh.
And so it's a juvenile written by Arthur C. Clarke. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any others that he wrote. And I know Heinlein wrote a lot, but I think I mentioned before that I completely missed Heinlein as a kid. I did not read Heinlein until I was an adult. I had, I'm sure those books existed on the shelf, but for some reason, I never picked one up, and I couldn't tell you why.
And I'm the same. Yeah. I didn't come across them at all. I came across them later and very much enjoyed them, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they're more my favorites than his adult books.
Oh, very
so.
Good. Yeah. He wrote a lot of weird stuff later, later on in his life.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. Moving on.
We don't have to get into that.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
There are books about that stuff.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, so fun. So, should we just start with Dolphin Island?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So, Dolphin Island is a book about Johnny Clinton. You know, the very first line says, Johnny Clinton was sleeping. You know, so Johnny Clinton, who he's living with his aunt and uncle, and in the middle of the night, this hover ship goes by and breaks down near the house he's staying in. Then he goes out to it and he boards it and says, "Isn't this nifty?" And while he's on there, the thing is repaired, I guess, and off it goes. And it's a hovercraft, so it can go over land and sea. So he falls asleep in there amongst the crates. It's like a big, you know, freight liner or whatever. And then he wakes up and there's alarms going off and things are not going well. There's been apparently the impression I got was that it was broken. I mean, it was like,
it finally broke down.
Yeah,
is what
they
I
didn't
thought
repair
too,
it well. It just broke, right? So it's over the ocean now. So that clearly that's a problem. So anyway, he ends up in the water and kind of holding on to some, you know, a crate, you know, and then dolphins come by and start pushing him towards hopefully land. And he ends up at an island where scientists are working on communication with dolphins. And then he gets to hang out because he's so far away from home now. You know, the adults do contact his aunt and uncle and everything to let him know where he's at and stuff. But then he just gets to hang out with these scientists. And he actually becomes an important little piece because he's, you know, he talks to the dolphins with this kind of a wristband. You know, I picture almost like a full keyboard or something on his arm, you know, attached to his arm while he's under the water. And he taps away on that and it makes the beeps, you know, that the dolphins understand and vice versa. So, yeah, so that's what it's about. And thoroughly, I mean, I was totally captured by it. And I've read it since. I didn't reread it for this, didn't get to it. But the last time I read it was about 2 years ago. So I think I've read it three times now. And I really like the story. And as a kid, it really captured me. And again, like I said, it directed me to the rest of mostly science fiction. You know, most of the stuff I'd like to read for leisure is science fiction still today. So,
yeah.
But it, you know, cause before that, we'll get into some other stuff, but you know, I would read things, you know, in the science fiction realm, Edgar Rice Burroughs, and, you know, I want to talk more about him later, but there was other things, but this one, it changed everything for me. It was just something that really flipped a switch in my head. And yes. I was searching for things like it right after that and ended up with Asimov and moving forward on there.
Oh, yeah. And see, that's interesting. I don't have a memory of a book that flipped a switch in my head. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
And I've experienced it, you know, as an adult where I've gone, oh, are there more books in this genre kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
But not like that. I read this book and just went, this is such a boy's adventure book.
Absolutely.
It was so great. Mm. All the things that happened to him and the fact that he had... the funny thing was, is all his problems were... He had to struggle some, but they were fairly easily overcome. Like, he didn't like his aunt and uncle, and they didn't like him.
Right, yeah.
So when he left, they were happy to let him go. But at one point, he stops and goes, oh, maybe I wasn't very easy for them to get along with either. But there's not a lot of reflection on it. There's not a lot of this or that. Most of his struggles come from things like physical things he must accomplish and endure.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
To me.
Very
you know,
well,
the struggles
absolutely.
To learn how to scuba dive and, you know, under all these circumstances. And then at the end where he has this big adventure where he's saving the day through trying to get, you know, word out that somebody's got a medical emergency kind of thing. And so it's very much an adventure story in that way. So I really liked it. And it's told in a real straightforward way. There's not a lot of characterization, I don't think.
Yeah, which is typical for Clark, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's typical for Clark. It's kind of typical for juveniles.
Hmm.
You're there to don't bore us, get to the chorus, you know?
Yeah, right.
That's what's the story.
Yeah.
And in fact, because one of the books I was thinking about maybe for next year, I thought I'd love to do Treasure Island. I love that book,
which
is like this book, right?
Very nice.
It's a boy's adventure kind of thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, what are there... Are there deeper themes? What is there? You know, because a lot of it's just adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of nails that. But what I loved is that as you're reading the book, Clark did such a wonderful job of, I mean, I didn't know he could write so beautifully, honestly, when he's writing about under the water and telling the story of how coral reefs are made. I now get it. I never got it before.
Oh, I love it.
He described it so well. I went, oh my gosh, now I see what they mean about all the little creatures, you know?
Yeah.
And all those things show that he loved nature. He loved that environment. And I know he lived in, Sri Lanka? Maybe? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sri Lanka, right.
So he lived there. So that he would have been around all kinds of things like that.
Yeah.
And then also, the little situation, which was interesting, since they can, and there's going to be spoilers everywhere for all this stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
People, just, also, they're kids' books. You can see it coming. but all the things about learning to talk to the dolphins and then finding out, here's what the dolphins would like. They need protection from this enemy.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah. And in this world today, we'd go, oh, well, naturally, you should just do it. But those people back then are going, well, no, wait, what do we get? You're going to help us explore. You're going to help us do other things that we might need in the ocean. And everybody's kind of going, well, okay, we can help with that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a three-way, well, it will eventually be, they're training the killer whale to avoid eating dolphins, so that will help things. But it will be an understanding of each side fairly, even though they're extremely different.
Hmm.
And fairly treating with each other.
Yes.
So there's that aspect of everything. And then when he says, the world is a battleground, and he starts talking, for one thing, from the dolphins and whales' point of view, but also ecosystems, where he gives the example of the antelopes, that if there are no predators, the antelopes die of starvation. I imagine for a lot of people that age reading that book, that would have been the first time they would have had any of those concepts brought to mind.
Yeah, I believe that. Yep.
Yeah, and it's not like they're going to go off and do it. But the thing I like about these books, and that's my family was talking about favorite kids' books at the, you know, after dinner, because we knew I was going to talk about this, so I was asking. And there's books like this one, or I think like mine, A Little Princess, or a few others, where you're a kid. You're not going, oh, now I'm going to try and be like this person. Now I'm going to do that. I'm going to keep the ecosystem in mind. You're not doing that. It's just a good story. But when you're older and you come across these ideas again, or you read a different kind of book about this topic, it's going to call this to mind, and you're going to remember some of the things like, oh, that was in that book. He explained it like this, you know, and it's starting the knowledge you're going to build on later for what you're going to think about these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's kind of important to read good stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
As a kid. Yeah, yep.
Exactly. And so it was also, therefore, I felt a window into what Arthur C. Clarke thought was important and what he loved.
Yeah,
because he took the trouble to write this book for kids about it.
Yeah, yeah. So meaning like the ecology and that stuff.
Yeah,
that,
the okay, nature, very good. But also, yeah, the way he structured the conversation between the dolphins and the people and what they're all trying to achieve. And they're all trying to be as kind as they can about things. But they're also doing some stuff these days you wouldn't do.
Yeah.
Even though they're being nice to the animals as they can. But that's also part of the times. Well, that and the fact that when Johnny's got to do this big dive or in the dark or whatever, and it says, there was one sentence that said, Johnny must have felt scared, as everyone did who for the first time but he, somehow I didn't copy it down right, but he had conquered his fears.
Yes.
So he just has that bald sentence that kind of sums up and goes, everybody feels like this when they're doing something scary.
Yeah.
Well, that is something you can hang on to as a kid.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which is, you know? We're back to, I think it's G.K. Chesterton, right? Talks about how books show us that dragons can be defeated.
Yes.
The good ones, right?
We know there are dragons, but this shows us they can be beaten. And then using Mary Watson's story, of the true story, which inspired Johnny on his big journey. If she could do that, I could try it too.
Yes. Yeah.
And if something happens to me, it's worth it to try to help all these people.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's a kind of book, that opens all that up. And it makes you feel like, you know, hey, I can do stuff, you know, which is great.
And it's such a good book that I am going to look for a physical copy to have on my bookshelf. So when my grandson is old enough,
it'll
be there to give him or for him to pick off.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe about, I don't know, 15 years ago, I did a internet search or, you know, just trying to find the same copy that I remembered.
Oh,
You know, because it's a library edition and the cover is green. I'll post it up.
Right.
But I found it, you know, on eBay one time, and I got it. It's an old library edition. It's actually from some library, but they had torn out, you know, some of the, all the identifying things as to which library it is.
Okay.
But it's got a little FCLA on the, you know, on the bottom, you know, Fiction Clark. So anyway, it's so cool to have found it, and it's just the exact one. But yeah, but it is just funny that, that, you know, you, these flashbulb memories you have in life. And, yeah, I just remember finding it and, loving it so much. So, but yeah, but I love, you know, thinking about it as an adult too, you know, these things that you're talking about, how, you know, this is something that's good for kids to read, you know, it's, you know, because I, as an adult, right, when I had kids, one of the things that I really liked to do was read some of what they read, because it, it gave us a lot to talk about, right? I didn't read everything they read. I wasn't, I didn't have like a tight grip. I was letting them explore. But every now and then, if they were reading something, I would pick that up too, you know? And that's how I read Twilight. And I think of like Twilight.
Yeah.
And Twilight is horrible. It's like, it is like an abusive relationship, you know?
Yeah. Oh, totally. This guy, I heard about it from my kids.
Yeah, this guy can kill you anytime, but you love him. And so the, we're just going to be okay with that, you know? that kind of a thing where you're just on edge all the time because, you know, the dude's a vampire. So, but I remember reading it. And then the thing is, you know, you get to have a good conversation with the kids, you know,
that's
and,
it.
You know, yeah. And you just say, yeah, what did you like about this? What didn't you like about it? You know, and, you know, nothing formal or anything, but yeah, that was a book that I remember talking to, my daughter about. And I'm like, yeah, this is what I felt about it. You know, what did you think? You know, so it was,
okay.
But that's the kind of book that, you know, I don't think is great for, you know, like this one, you know, there's just a lot of positivity in it. And, you know, this adventure story where, again, you can do this. Here's, you're reading it. You're right there with Johnny. Johnny's got to jump in the water and he's scared, but he does it anyway, you know? So it's good. It's good stuff. And, yeah.
And in that way, I like Heinlein's juveniles, but they're not like this at all. They're always looking at some social issue while they're going along. They're always set in some setting that is really different. I'm thinking of Citizen of the Galaxy, which is my favorite of them. But even one of my favorites, too, is The Star Beast, I think it's called. Oh, yes.
Okay.
None of those have this feel, which it feels just like a great boy's adventure. Like I said, like Treasure Island or Kidnapped, Journey to the Center of the Earth, which I also loved and read so many times.
Jules Verne. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You can burn it up.
Yeah.
And that kind of led me to things like Edgar Rice Burroughs' Lost World books and Tarzan and everything like that. Yeah, but
I remember that too. Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a whole different character, but and they weren't important in the way that like A Little Princess is important, but they were important. There are a whole group of books that I remember reading over and over and really loving.
Oh, me too. I'd love to talk about a few of them, but yeah, let's definitely talk about A Little Princess though.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, A Little Princess is, and this has had several movies made about it, I think. And you worked on a play of it, right? Doing the lighting or something?
A Little Princess, I don't recall this one. We did Little Women.
Maybe. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe you'd done this. Never mind then.
Nope. This was new to me.
I'm even more pleased it was brand new. So did you like it?
I did. I liked it very much. I thought it was very good.
Okay.
Yeah, 1905.
Well, yeah. I know.
Yeah, good for Sarah. I'm glad she made it.
she was such a sweet, wonderful kid.
Absolutely.
Which makes her sound insipid, and she was not. And to
and it's
me,
fun. You know, when I read this, you said this one was a boy's book. You know, this is definitely a girl's book.
Yeah.
I felt, you know, yeah.
Yeah. We each went, oh, here's the book for me.
Yes.
You know?
right.
Yeah. And so basically, so 1905. Sarah has been raised in India. Her father is a soldier there, or at least he started off as a soldier there. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he's doing there. He's part of the Raj, but they didn't think of it that way. She's just writing a book. bestseller author, and he's bringing her to England to go to school, and that's what they would do. And then, in fact, Kipling went through that very thing himself as a kid. But there was this idea that the Indian climate was not healthy for English kids, and it may not have been. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But they would bring them back to go to school in England for a while, and then come and get them when they were older. And so she's off at Miss Minchin's seminary. Miss Minchin is just one of the worst people in the world.
Come she's on, just, Miss Minchin. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's out for every penny she can get, but she hides it behind this false niceness and flattery and all this stuff. And but Sarah is an unusual kid. Sarah is deeper than a lot of kids, and maybe because she grew up with a lot of adults, who knows, but she thinks about things deeply, and partly because she has a very vivid imagination, and also partly because she loves books and loves reading. And so when she's in certain situations, she can tell stories and make them up, or if she's going through hardships especially, she'll pretend. And it will help her get through the hard times, or she'll help other people this way. When there's a little girl at the school who's very upset and throwing a tantrum, and she says, well, let's pretend I'm your mama since you don't have a mama, you know.
Yeah.
And she'll use those things to kind of smooth the way.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually what happens is, and she's treated like she's a little princess, so because one of her imaginations is, or is imagining, so sorry, is that she is a princess, and so she should act like a princess. Mm. And so she has a lot of imaginings about that, like theories of, well, I've not had any trials. If I had trials, maybe I wouldn't be nice. Mm. Well, by the end of the book, we find out, because boy, has she had trials. Her father's fortune has melted away, seemingly, and he has died. So this is devastating, and it happens on her birthday, or she gets the news on her birthday, and Miss Minchin instantly strips everything away from her because she's furious because she spent all this money, advanced it for this party, and hasn't been paid recently. And so she's going to get every penny back out of making Sarah work as a common drudge.
Horrible. Moves her up into the attic.
Oh. And she had befriended one of the household servants who's also about her age, Becky.
Mm.
And so Becky was able to help her kind of adapt. But what this meant is she never was warm. She never had clothes that really fit. She was wearing old, small clothes. She was sent out and not given any food if she wasn't back at a certain time, even though she was doing people's errands. I mean, she was just treated horribly.
Mm.
So what you see is, now that I'm thinking about it, when I was reading it as a kid, it was just the greatest adventure in the whole world.
Yeah.
I mean, Sarah's the most interesting person. You would like to meet Sarah. You see why all these people are her friends, and she wants to be friends with them. She's very friendly and generous and giving. And so when these hardships happen, she is really put to the test, and she keeps saying things like, well, if I was a princess, I would be polite even when I'm being treated badly.
Mm-hmm.
Which would baffle Miss Minchin, who'd get even madder at her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wanted to see her cruelty having an effect, I think. So what happens is that at the very end of the book, she's talking to Ermengarde, and Ermengarde was one of the kids she's befriended who's very plain, fat, kind of stupid, and her father is very smart. He wants her to do well with her learning, so Sarah's been helping with all this stuff. But Ermengarde still comes to find her in the middle of the night and says, why aren't you my friend anymore? You won't even look at me. And Sarah says, well, I thought you didn't want to be a friend. She goes, well, I'm the same.
Yes.
And Sarah goes, oh, yeah, now we find out you're nice and I'm not nice. And I was like, that's not, of course, really true, but she says, being kind is better than being smart.
Hmm.
That's kind of what the whole book is about.
Yeah, and it's kind of,
go ahead.
I think what I was pulling out of it is that you can, despite hardship, right, you can be what you want, like, through grace and dignity.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I got out of it. It was like,
you
know, your reaction to things is what you can control.
Right.
Yeah. Can't control the things. Yeah. And then, you know, power of friendship, loyalty from, I think his name was Carisford, the Indian guy.
Oh, the friend, the Indian gentleman. Yeah,
Captain Crew's friend who eventually kind of saved her, right? Started sending her gifts and stuff. I loved that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. She's thinking magic is at work.
Yes.
Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah, at the time she needed it. And, you know, because what she's pointing out about being a princess, the people at the school are all thinking, right, she's loaded. She's got really nice clothes and better quarters than everyone. She could throw a big party. She could do all these things. She's spoiled by the, or she would be if she was a kid who could be spoiled by, she's indulged, let's say, by the people running the place. But she's saying things like, soldiers don't like going into battle. When she's getting ready to leave her father, she's like, you just have to do what you have to do.
Well, it's similar to Dolphin Island, isn't it?
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So she's clear-sighted. She understands who she is and who Miss Minchin is. Mm-hmm. And that's why Miss Minchin hates her. She's not unkind, but she's just straightforward. She defends people who are in distress. She says you need trials to know who you are. And then the book points out at one point, nature made her a giver. So if she didn't have things, she gave of herself. And I thought that's all grace building on nature, right? It's the things you encounter and how you react, as you're saying.
Right, right.
That make you live up to your potential. And she's doing it by the only thing she has to motivate her is herself and the friendship of the people around her. Because she was befriending people who nobody else cared about. And the thing when she gives the 5 buns to the little starving beggar child is, that's hardcore, man.
That's right.
And she's starving herself, but she's like, a princess would give them.
Yes.
You know, and it inspires the woman who has the bake shop who sees it happening.
Right. Yeah, it's so beautiful. It's really, really good.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of look at this as an adult. I look at this as a bookend to another book that's famous that this author wrote called The Secret Garden.
Oh, I've heard of that. I don't know it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah. That's when I thought we should read these two together, and it just didn't work out because we read these two instead.
Yeah.
But it's about a little girl, also raised in India and very spoiled, but she's a regular little girl, so she's the most obnoxious, entitled, spoiled, unlikable child in the world. And boy, I hated that book my whole childhood.
Oh, wow.
Because she was so awful. But I recently reread it a few years ago and went, oh my gosh, I love this book now.
Oh, nice.
Because it's got such a character arc. And in kind of the same way as this does, through interactions with other people and your environment, it just shows you a lot about being a human being. And this one, of course, is just the most wonderful story in the world and just charmingly done. And I made it sound like a really moralistic tale, but it's so well told, you don't even notice. You're just carried along by the story. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. And I think this is the bookend because it's like somebody who was a saint, being born to be a saint and perfecting herself. It's not the way they tell the story, but it's, that is what's happening.
Right,
she's practicing what she preaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. But yeah, I mean, these are uplifting things, you know, getting through life, doing the stuff, you know.
Both of them are. Yeah. Just one's in a boy's way and the other one's in this more, like you said, the girl's way.
Yeah.
But different.
Different, but very similar. That's neat.
And both boys and girls can read and enjoy both. I think they're just very different.
Right. You bet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You probably, I would have been hard pressed to pick up a book with the word princess on it.
Yeah. And there's some book out there like called The Island of the Dolphins or something.
Yes.
And it's, I think, a girl's book.
Uh-huh.
It's some kind of thing. And I just always looked at the description and went, no, thank you. So this one was, the book you picked was much more my kind of book.
That's good. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. It is good. Yeah. So the kind of books that I was into, like right before this and, you know, and somewhat after too. It's not like, you know, I stopped reading them, but Alfred Hitchcock and the Three Investigators. Have you ever heard of those books?
Well, I've heard of the Alfred Hitchcock books because he would collect different like mystery stories and things, right?
So, so these are the three investigators. And I remember this book from my second grade. It was in the, I don't know why I remember this. I do not have like a super memory or anything, but this one was in the windowsill in second grade in Mrs. Cleave's class. And it was The Mystery of the Green Ghost. And it was Alfred Hitchcock and the Three Investigators, three boys. And there's a whole series of these. Yeah. It, you know, it's not unlike like a Scooby-Doo or something like that, where there's some going on in the house and these three boys go figure it out.
I love that.
Yeah, it was so fun. But this whole series of stuff. And then that's, of course, related. I have another book in my hand here, The Tower Treasure, by Franklin Dixon, this is the Hardy Boys.
Yes.
Yes. So I must have had 20 of these or so, these little hardcovers. The Tower Treasure is the first one. You know, even little illustrations in there where, was it Frank and Joe? You know, got their little motorcycles and they're kind of holding up against a cliff car is zooming towards them. And yeah. And then they had like a little book called, you know, the Investigator's Handbook, which I would have, you know, which I remember flipping through and stuff. And but I had a bunch of those and
I had, loved them. Just to match you, I had Nancy Drew.
Ah, the yellow ones.
Yes, the yellow ones.
These ones are blue.
Yes, the boys' ones were blue and mine were yellow. And they had great pictures of Nancy on the cover.
I love it.
Doing whatever, the mystery of the fire dragon, the secret of the old clock. And it was so exciting to get some money and find one of these books. Which one do I want to get? Oh, man. Because I'm looking at some of these covers going, oh, the secret of the old clock. That's the one I had right there.
Yeah, and, I've seen that cover.
And they were I didn't realize this till just now, and I'm looking. Carolyn Keene was a pseudonym.
Yes.
So there were some ghost writers
and who wrote the Dixon early ones. And I think Dixon was too. I'm almost positive this was ghost written too. Yeah.
But she and her two best friends, Bess and George Fane, an athletic tomboy, they were off solving the adventures too. So just like the Hardy Boys, and I loved them so much.
You bet.
Yes.
Yeah, that was fun. So it's funny, you know, when I mentioned this show, I mean, Only Murders in the Building, in that very first season, Hardy Boys came up, and I just thought that was fun.
Everybody had it.
Steve Martin says to Selena Gomez, that's a little bit of an old reference for you, but not for him. He was reading them, probably.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so,
for sure.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, that's good stuff. And then another memory that I have is discovering Edgar Rice Burroughs, and it was in the library.
Okay.
This is the main public library. I picked up a book called The Lost Continent, and I have a copy of that, paperback, and I read it, and I loved it, and then off I went into Mars and Tarzan, and you know, I didn't read all the Tarzan books. My older brother actually collected all 24 of those.
Good heavens.
Black, you know, the Tarzan books, the 24 black ones. Yeah.
There were so many.
Yeah. And I read probably like five of those or so is all.
Okay.
But I did like them. Yeah. I have two of them. I'm looking at my shelf. I have two of them. I have one and two.
Yep. Okay. Well, those are the best, really. Yes, I mean, because so it resolves the love story and everything. Yeah. Well, and I had I don't think I owned any, but I got them from the library. Or actually, now I'm remembering, my best friend Teresa, her family loved these books, so she lent them to me. Oh, and nice. That's when I discovered Tarzan. And then later, I discovered, the Lost World series that he did. I never cared about
Pellucidar? Is that what you mean?
No.
Is Pellucidar inside the world? Or
no, these were a professor. Am I thinking of the right author?
Professor George Challenger, Sir Conan Doyle.
Okay, that's it. I had the wrong sensational author.
All right.
So, So really, I just read the Tarzan ones then. I got Professor Challenger mixed up with it, and I came to him later, but that was Arthur Conan Doyle when I went, what? I loved Sherlock Holmes, but I was like, what? He wrote Lost World books too? Ooh, you know.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, as a kid,
Jules Verne was my first.
I had this big hardcover. I don't know if it was mine or, you know, just floating around the house, but it was it was Sherlock Holmes, and it looked like it was in the original magazine. You know what I mean? When you flip the pages, there was columns and stuff. It just looked like the magazine.
Wow.
Yeah, so we had that floating around. So I read a few of those stories. I never read them all. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And we did, here, we did The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
On the podcast. So yeah, so Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, friend of the pod.
Oh, yeah. We all got to love him.
That's right. That's right.
Did you have more?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, also when I was a kid, something that would happen a lot is teachers would read out loud.
Oh, yeah.
In class. And I remember the books, there was two of them, Where the Red Fern Grows.
Oh, yeah.
And then Summer of the Monkeys.
Those, that sounds interesting.
Those were the two. Yeah, so Summer of the Monkeys was about, it's like there was a circus passing through. And there was an accident, like, on the train, and a bunch of monkeys got away. Oh. And they were in this forest, and it was in the south, and there was this boy and his dog. He had a dog, I remember. Mm-hmm. And, there were monkeys in the trees.
That's so really it was, funny.
You know, it was that was a favorite, you know, to listen to the teacher read. Yeah.
You just made me think of a very old book. And so some of the books I love that I will at least briefly mention at some point are just regular kids' books. But some of them are because my mother had a whole bunch of her old books from when she was a young, I guess, juvenile age.
Mm-hmm.
And I read them even when I didn't understand what a gymkhana was and why anybody would be jumping their horses over anything. My mom loved horses. She had so many horse books. Nice. But she had other books, and one of them was Toby Tyler. Have you ever heard of that book?
Toby Tyler. No, I have not.
When you talked about the monkeys and the circus, let me... it's... or 10 weeks... Toby Tyler or 10 Weeks with a Circus.
Hmm.
And it's about a 10-year-old orphan who runs away from his uncle's house to join the traveling circus, and then once they get far enough away, he discovers that... this, a guy who lured him into running away, is awful. And he's kind of sheltered by some of the people in the circus, but he has a good friend who's a chimpanzee whose name is Mr. Stubbs, who kind of comforts him. They'll kind of sleep together and keep each other warm, and, you know, Mr. Stubbs will follow him around, and, you know, eventually he's saved. It's kind of like a Pinocchio kind of an idea, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
things
aren't as bad as you think. Don't go running away.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the monkeys and the circus was the thing I remembered.
Okay,
so,
cool. Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And then, I remember Lloyd Alexander had a, like, 5-book set of something, and I remember reading that at the library. And I grew up in Idaho Falls, Idaho. And the library had, in the bottom level was the kids section. And then you'd go up this ramp to the adult section.
Oh.
And I remember going up the ramp and wondering if it was okay the whole way. But in the adult section, I was able to go find Isaac Asimov. And that was the first Asimov I read. So really, Clark and Asimov... I was reading those pretty early. I remember Childhood's End by Clark.
Mm-hmm.
My brother was in high school, and I was in middle school. And in the class he was in, everybody was reading Childhood's End.
Oh.
And he didn't want to read it. So he said, Scott, read this and tell me what's in it. And I did.
What a smart fellow.
So I did.
Yeah.
And I was like, this book is great. I loved it. Yeah.
That's really funny.
I'm still a Clark fan. Yeah.
I really hated that book so much.
Did you? Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Felt like nothing happened. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Yeah. But there was a big reveal that was very exciting when it happened. You know?
Oh, was there? I don't remember.
There was. There's a famous reveal in that one. Yeah.
Yep. Is it They're Us? I mean, no. That kind of reveal.
No.
Well, Clark was too smart for that, and that was his big book. I mean, I remember when it came out, and
I don't know.
My family read it and liked it, or my mom and dad did, and I read it and went, oh my gosh, is anything going to ever happen? They're just wandering around the ship.
Yes, so, exactly.
Maybe I quit.
Oh my gosh. And then, you know, audio was such a big thing. I'm talking so much here.
Okay. Do it. So oh, I'm going to get there. Don't
audio
worry.
Became a thing for me at this time, too. So I've always been into audio. I just have always loved it. I used to record Star Trek episodes on audio tape. And then when I went to bed, I would press play. And then I would just fall asleep listening to a Star Trek episode.
I love that so much, my sweet little nerd. Oh,
I'm so nerdy.
So sweet and adorable.
And then, And then you go.
See, they didn't have audio in my day. I think I'm 15 years older than you, or something like that. So
right. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
So then, in the library, you know, back then. So I'm talking. So I was born in '68. So we're talking in the '70s here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, audiobooks. They're not like today. There was no such thing as a full novel on audio. What you'd have records with old radio shows on them.
Mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
excerpts of things. Like, I remember the Kidman albums that had, like, you know, Sandworms of Dune, you know, so you could listen to Frank Herbert read a piece of Dune.
Wow.
And Arthur C. Clarke had one where he read The Star and, The Transit of Earth, which was so good. I mean, Transit. I listened over and over and over. But The Transit of Earth was about a guy on Mars who's he's the last person on Mars on this Martian mission. You know, and that sounds familiar to people who watch movies nowadays. The Martian, but he wasn't getting off. There was no way he was getting off. He was going to die. So it's just kind of what he did at the end, and driving his little car off into the sunset, listening to some classical music. But, you know, he just ran out of air and everything. He couldn't survive.
Right.
And that was the story, The Transit of Earth. What he did is he captured the transit of Earth over in the front of the sun. You know, the Earth passed in front of the sun from Mars' perspective. And once he did that, that was his last official act as a live person, I guess.
Oh, right,
And then he was like, okay, now I'm going to run out of air and everything. So what I'm going to do, hop in this car and drive as far as I can till it happens. Wow. And that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Well, it's wonderfully melancholy.
Yes, right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like some of the Martian Chronicles and things.
Absolutely. And then speaking of Martian Chronicles, that led to Ray Bradbury, who I believe I first encountered on audio. There's all kinds of radio shows. He was really, there's so many radio shows and, you know, some record or something like that. And then when I was a teenager, I got The Stories of Ray Bradbury, and, you know, which is a big, thick book full of his stories. My favorite one, it's still The Emissary, which is about this sick kid who has a dog, and he sends his dog out into the world. And the dog would bring him stuff
back.
Bring
things back.
Yeah,
yes.
He'd bring like a branch, And then his dog stopped coming back. And he waited, he was so worried. Where's my dog? Where's my dog?
Yeah.
And then the dog comes back and it smells like death.
Yeah.
And it brought something with it.
And it's brought something kind of dragging its feet along the hallway and that kind of thing.
Exactly. Like, yeah. The emissary.
Exactly. Yes.
So good.
Well, and so I think my parents brought home a lot of stuff that I read. They brought home Dune. They brought home, because that's when it would be at the grocery store. And so you're born in 68, I was born in 57, so I'm 11 years older.
Gotcha.
So just enough older that they'd be bringing this stuff home because it was coming out then.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a precocious reader. So in the fourth grade, I was reading Agatha Christie. Not that that's that hard, but, you know, anyway, so I would just pick up stuff and read it that way too. So I think they brought home the Martian Chronicles and things. They liked science fiction and mysteries and would bring home all kinds of things like that.
Yeah. all kinds of stuff like that. And then I think as I must have joined the science fiction book club 12 times. It feels like.
Me too.
You know, you join it, you get those four books for a penny or whatever, and then
you fulfill your required books and obligation
yes. and then shut her down.
I did it too. I still have some of them. Yep.
I have such an attachment to some of those old books. Like I'm looking at my bookshelf, The Dragon Riders of Pern. Book club edition. Yeah. That's where I read those three books. It's an omnibus with, what is it, Dragon Flight, Dragon Quest, and The White Dragon.
Those are good books, by the way. We did the first one. Okay, we did cool. the first one on the Very show. Oh, so, because yeah. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, because I have one of those science fiction book clubs of Midworld by Alan Dean Foster.
Ooh, nice.
Still, yeah. I don't even have to look at my bookshelf. I know it's there. I have some others, too, but that's the one where.
The Complete Robot by Asimov. I'm looking. Oh, there's a science fiction book club edition. It's just red. Mm-hmm. You know, red with white writing on it. what other ones do I have that are those? I think I have Jack Chalker, which is around this corner. I can't quite see, but. Jack Chalker, The Four Lords of the Diamond.
I don't know that.
Yeah, that was one. But yeah, that was a source for some books. Mm-hmm. And then I just have such great memories of once I was riding bikes around. In Idaho Falls, the library was quite far away from my house. It would have taken me probably up to a half an hour to ride a bike there.
Wow.
But I could use back roads and stuff, you know, I wasn't on the, you know, I could just go across the busy street and just be on these roads. But I would go there and not only was the library there, but there was also a bookstore. It was one of those used bookstores that's just a big pile of books and they're not in any order. And it's kind of smallish, you know?
Yeah.
So you go in there and you're looking through all these paperbacks and stuff. So it would be, you know, a glorious Saturday would be me taking off for the library, picking up stuff, and then going to that bookstore and seeing what I could find, and then going home. Oh, yeah, loved it.
There's nothing like a bookstore.
That was me. Not a very exciting kid, but that was me.
Well, but I think how many of us are there? There's billions of us. That's why we all understand that. So, and I remember... when I was an adult on my own, like, so in college, I never had much money ever for a long time, but I would go to the used bookstores, and that's where I discovered Georgette Heyer when I was in college, and went, oh my gosh, this is such great writing, and so funny, and all the things, because we read one of those. Yeah. And but then I got to where I could, like, go to a bookstore every so often and splurge and buy a book, and it was so wonderful just to stand there and look at all these books, and there's so many that I discovered just by picking something off of the shelf because it looked interesting.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. And now there's less and less of that because even the regular bookstores carry fewer and fewer random choices like that.
That is tough, yeah.
And it's too bad. So so for me, if I might
Go
back. So because when you said what was a book that was important to your childhood, instantly A Little Princess came up. And not important, just important because I liked reading it over and over and over.
There you go. Yeah.
But later when I was thinking about it, I went, oh, there's also the Little House series.
Oh, yeah.
Little House in the Big Woods, Little House on the Prairie. I read the whole series many times. I loved them so much. I was saying this to Rose, and Rose, I said, you never got into them. She goes, no, I discovered early in life, I don't like pioneer stories. And I went,
oh my gosh.
I love them.
That is so fun. You reminded me of another one. Have you ever heard of The Great Brain?
I have heard of it. I don't think I've read it.
Is it a pioneer story?
But
the thing is, it's connected in my head. I don't know why, but it's definitely the 1800s because I remember a story about getting a water closet. Like the first toilet in town. And The Great Brain would sell tickets for people to come see it. And, you know, so he was always conniving and trying to come up with things. But there was like five or six of those.
Sounds like an Encyclopedia Brown smart kid. Yeah, kind of.
Encyclopedia Brown was always mysteries, right?
Mm-hmm.
How funny. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
I never read them. I knew of them.
Your pioneer spirit reminded me of The Great Brain.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. That's how those go. Mm-hmm. So, And also, I really liked Anne of Green Gables. And both of these are very common for everybody to like, you know, and Nancy Drew and all that stuff. A Wind in the Willows. You know, Little Women was okay, but Eight Cousins is the one I really liked. No one had ever heard of it. Yeah. No. And that's my favorite. That's about a girl whose parents die or father, whoever's left dies. And she goes to live with her uncle, who lives near the whole Scottish clan that, and she's got eight cousins, eight, and they're all boys. Mm. So they're having all kinds of adventures together.
Oh, fun.
So that's a really fun one. And the one, I would say the one I read, obviously, you know, science fiction and Tarzan and all that stuff at the same time. But the one I would say the important science fiction-y book for me is A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, okay.
I have such a fondness for that book.
Nice.
And sometime we'll read it. And maybe it's a girl's book, but I think it's everybody book.
Yeah, and I never read it, but I remember that floating around school. Really? I never have.
Maybe I have to put it on my list for next year. Well, nice.
Yeah, good.
It's got a lot going on in there. And it's just a great adventure and everything. It's, I guess it's more fantasy than science, but still it's got the science-y wrapping.
Yeah.
And the Mary Poppins books, I read those. They were also great. Mary Poppins is so much snarkier than you ever saw in a movie. I mean, gosh, come on. Mm-hmm. But then, as, and you know, and then, so I told you about all the ones like Treasure Island and everything.
Yeah.
But because of my mother, I read animal books in a way that I wouldn't have otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I read Black Beauty. That's why I read The Black Stallion. And those are well known, but then I read, she also had Smokey the Cow Horse, which I remembered while we were talking and I went, oh, I loved that one.
Smokey was, the Cow Horse.
He was a wild stallion who was tamed, named for his smoky color.
Ooh.
Then someone stole him and treated him horribly. So he was a bad horse. I mean, you know how it is.
Love it.
It was great. And White Ruff was the same. It was kind of a Lassie story. I didn't like Lassie, but it was about a collie who gets stolen and I don't, maybe he winds up at the circus. I don't know why everybody winds up at the circus. Yeah. They're obviously full of terrible people, except for Freaks, which we saw last year. That's which right. is full of wonderful hearted people, except for a couple. And there was another one that was, I tried to find the name of this one too. There was one about, as I've told you, a family that a kid belonged to. They lived under the ocean. The family were scientists. And he could swim with the dolphins, and they find aliens down there or something.
Wow.
And I think I might have tracked that one down. But,
okay. Nice.
But the other animal one I remember, and I can't track this one down for love or money, and it's about a grizzly bear. And it's really kind of about the ranger who's tracking the grizzly bear. And when you try to look it up, there are myriad stories, real and not, about rangers tracking grizzly bears, and none of them are the one I'm talking about.
Oh, wow.
It's very frustrating. But she may have inherited these from, like, her grandfather or something. Oh, wow. You know?
Yeah.
Well, that's neat. So, but that's a whole series of stories that I didn't necessarily love, but I read them. And I read them more than once. So they had enough interest.
Yeah.
But the ones I really did love, and then I'll quit talking.
One
of them was about animals. And I don't think anybody knows this book anymore. And it's really... sounds terrible when I talk about it. It's called Beautiful Joe. And Joe was this mongrel puppy that his mother belongs to a horrible person. And he picks the puppy up because he doesn't like it. He's going to kill it. And the mother flies at him and bites him. So he kills the mother and cuts the puppy's ears off next to his head. I mean, and some kind young woman comes by and hears the squalling and saves the puppy. And then the whole book must have been written for the SPCA because it's all about her saving horribly treated animals, one right after the other. And I read that book so many times.
Oh, wow. That's fun.
Because when you're a kid, you don't think about it the way you do now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's
then three more books.
Please.
Then I'm done.
Please.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the other one, I guess, that was, and I, it's been such a pleasure, Scott, for me to remember some of these books.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah.
And write them down on these pages because I was so fond of all of them. And I don't think I understood all of them a lot of the time.
Yep.
So this one about Frog and the Horse Who Knew No Master.
Ooh.
Well, that was interesting because it's about a horse that's a mean horse. It's going to be shot for viciousness. And an officer steps in and claims the horse and tames him. Well, the thing is this was all set in India. The guy trains him to be a polo horse. So they're playing chukkas. Mm-hmm. I guess those are like quarters or whatever. I never knew. They were doing stuff. There was somebody who was jealous of him. He was trying to do things to the horse. Then the guy would have to go on missions through the jungle, wherever they were going in India. And then things would happen. There were snakes. There were bogs. People were caught in quicksand. It was a lot. And I loved it.
Oh, nice. That's
fun.
And
then there was Popo's Miracle, which is the sweetest story about a little boy. It's from 1938. A little boy in this little Mexican village, mm-hmm. who he finds a lost burro that wanders in with some artist materials. And the boy's spiritual quest is to return them to the painter who lost the burro. Because he's got to pay back because he loves using these paints. And the burro at one point steps on them and the paints come out. And he's allowed to use them. Then he leads the burro back over to the paint. And his father's like, well, now you've done wrong. You must take the donkey back, find his master and confess, you know.
Yeah.
So you're seeing authentic life in a village. You're seeing this boy's introduction to art, his adventure as he has to go out into the wide world and find the guy. I mean, it was unlike any book I'd read. And then, you know, this one, I think, because I read it on Forgotten Classics, The Wonder Stick.
The Wonder Stick sounds familiar to me.
About the prehistoric people.
Okay.
Rue, the sparrow herded.
Okay.
And his tribe with his horrible, mean, vicious chief, Grumgra. And they both like, what's her name? But the woman in the case, I can't remember her name. And she's kind of flirtatious. She plays them off against each other. But Rue is, you know, the scientific nerd, basically. Uh-huh. He's not strong enough for anyone to care. But he invents the bow and arrow or the spear. He gets them out of a thing where they're flooded or where the cannibals are going to try and eat them. And you'll have to look for it. I remember Jesse loved that book, and we even talked about it on SFF Audio.
Wonderful.
Because he heard me reading it. Yeah. And I read it to the kids, and I brought that up to Rose. And Rose went, of course I remember you reading us The Wonder Stick, the description of the Neanderthal woman, where they went, we might not think her attractive. And then they're describing her overhanging brow and her hairy legs. And we just laughed so hard we fell off the couch.
That's so fun. Oh, I love it.
And it was such a great adventure book, but it was also such a shared experience. We all remember it, you
that's
know.
So, yes, that's the best. The best.
Yes.
You bet. That's
the last thing I'll tell you is when I asked this question, my husband was standing there, and I know my husband was a boy who read no books unless he was forced, ever. And he reads all the time now, of course, and everything. But he got this look in his face like, read a book? Are you kidding? And he said, but you know, we were read to, and I remember one book that was read to us, which was Charlotte's Web, and that was a great book. Oh, and I was like, I love that.
Charlotte's Web. Wow. Yep.
Because he's right. It was a great book.
Yeah. I think that's another one that my teacher would have read out loud, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
How fun. I don't remember my teacher's reading books. They must have done it. But so, Charlotte's Web is one I didn't read until.
It's reading time.
Ooh. And Charlotte's Web, I think, is one that I read when I was too old for it. You know, I appreciated it. I still shed tears at Charlotte's death.
Yes.
Spoiler.
Poor Charlotte.
I know. But lucky for Wilbur.
Yes.
So, yeah.
That is anyway. That's a great pick. So you said your mom had all these books. So when you were growing up, did your mom read all the time?
Oh, both my parents read all both the time. Both
of them? Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. So and my whole family read all the time. My brother, sister, I mean, they didn't read. Probably my siblings didn't read as much as I did because I was just exceptionally bookish. They would play outside more and everything. But we all read.
Oh, wow. I was definitely the most bookish. And my dad was always reading, but he loved nonfiction. So he was always reading nonfiction. A lot of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He had these Bantam paperbacks. In fact, he's still, you know, he's 86. And when we go to a bookstore, like a used one, he tries to find any Bantam, you know, are there any of these around, you know?
So, yeah.
It's good stuff.
For sure. They were a good publisher.
Yeah. And my mom, when I was young, she seemed to read quite a bit. But when, you know, like by the time I was in high school, I don't remember her reading very much. But she loved Robin Cook. Medical thriller type
thrillers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So not I remember my style, that, but
that's,
they were
that's
a thing.
The author I remember her. And then the Andromeda Strain, Michael Crichton. Yep. So that's the kind of stuff she was reading.
And my parents, my, you know, it's funny because these days you think, oh, dads, and they read nonfiction. Of course, you're not that way. My husband reads mostly nonfiction, but he'll read regular fiction, like the Tony Hillerman books that I was talking about and stuff.
Yeah.
And in fact, he brings that stuff up. He just brought it up the other day, and he goes, well, that's why the Navajos did it like this. Yes. That's how you solve a mystery. And I went, yes.
There you go. Yeah.
So, but they both read mostly nonfiction, both of them. Mysteries, science fiction, regular fiction, old books. My father didn't read as many, really very many old books, but and my mom read more, but not tons.
Yeah.
But they had the whole set of Sherlock Holmes. They had, you know, that kind of thing. And they would occasionally read nonfiction, but it's usually if it was, you know, super popular nonfiction. So you'd find it, again, at the grocery store racks or at a bookstore or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But the grocery store racks were just priceless for getting books into people's hands.
For sure.
You want to read, but you don't have time to go find or go to a bookstore.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Wow, that's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have really great memories with my dad, too, fairly recent ones, relatively recent ones, where we, I don't know, four or five times drove from Idaho Falls to Spokane, Washington, where my second oldest brother lives.
Okay.
So I have two older brothers, you know, one that's two years older and one that's about a year older than that, a little more than a year older. But we would listen to Tom Clancy. And so it wasn't super recent because they were always abridged. You know, it'd be like six cassette version of a Tom Clancy novel, right?
Right.
And, man, we enjoyed that. We were both glued. You know, we'd put that in and drive, and that was fun. That was fun.
Sure. Tom Clancy. Well, you want him abridged anyway for her, right?
That's probably right. It's a good choice to get the abridged. Yeah. I remember, you know, Red Storm Rising, which is like his 1,000-pager.
That's
they had
a great
like a
book,
two-cassette
though.
Version of Red Storm Rising. And I was like, what is in that? Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's like chapter one, chapter two. They just
Red
read the chapter
Rising
titles.
Red my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my husband and I both read a bunch of those. Yeah. Well, two or three anyway.
Yeah. Red Storm Rising was something. And I did read that whole thing. I wonder if there's a contemporary that is similar. I would love to read something like that. You know, with modern, you know, that's modern.
AI's waiting to tell you.
Yes. Tell me who's liked Tom Clancy, right?
Yeah. And they will do it. Something I meant to mention earlier when you were talking about, I really loved the whole idea of this juvenile book, Dolphin Island, waking you up to science fiction as a genre and you going off and then finding the adult books because they didn't have enough of the ones for young kids.
Yeah.
So that is such a common theme that I found in this book I just finished reading called The Secrets of the Heinlein Juvenile.
Ooh, nice.
Uncovering the Hidden Magic of Perennial Young Adult Literature.
Nice.
And it's by J. Daniel Sawyer.
Oh, I love it.
There are actually two books out right now about Heinlein juveniles. They were that important to a lot of people. This
Incredible,
one,
yeah.
I liked the way he talked about the stories more than the other one, but that's equally good. Alexi Panshin, I think, did that one.
Okay.
Or maybe did the introduction for it. I can't remember. But the thing is what it does is it takes you through the books in order. So it describes them really well, in depth, looks at their influence. And then all these different people are going, like authors and things going, and then I read this and then that happened. But this author of this book especially had that experience.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
It just shows you, how it's Chesterton again saying, defending Penny Dreadfuls, you know?
Yeah.
Saying that, but people are reading. I mean, he's like, if this is what you can read, a good book is a good book and it's okay. Just read it.
Right. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
How fun. This has been so fun.
I know. What
I
a great
really,
topic
it just gets me all excited. Yeah. I was like, I want to read some Edgar Rice Burroughs.
It made me realize how often when I'm at a loss talking to somebody or I don't know them well, I go, so what are you reading? I just love to talk about what books they're reading, what books am I? And I don't have to talk about the book itself, just, you know, a sense of who you are. What do you read?
Yeah, very much. Yeah, that is something. It's amazing how quickly a friendship can start that way.
Yeah.
It's like a shared book. There's just like a connection, you know? Yeah. Love it. Love it so much. Very good. Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure I could talk another hour. I could come up with stuff easy.
Well, this is the sign that we do the podcast for ourselves and hopefully other people like stuff in it.
You bet. Well, I hope that people enjoy it and think of their own. Yeah. I would love to hear from people if they choose.
Yes. Tell us your favorite books.
It'd be fun. Yeah.
Real important ones for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I will say, and I left Rose out and I didn't ask Hannah, but Rose said The Giver.
Oh,
and Ella Giver, Enchanted and A Little Princess.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Very good.
So.
Yep. Love it. Well, good. Yep. I've read The Giver.
I did because I did that thing you were talking about. When my kids were reading books, I would read them too to see what they were.
Yeah. And my daughter was reading that in high school and I read it and I actually wrote a note to the teacher saying, thank you for doing this book. Because, you know, I used to be on a school board and. Man, people are sensitive. I had somebody who wanted to show Schindler's List. He was doing he had a class where he was showing movies, history through movies.
Yeah.
And he wanted to show Schindler's List and they shut him down and there was nothing I could do. And I made sure to go find him and tell him that I was really supportive of what he was doing.
I was on your side.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was just crazy. So yeah, with books and stuff, people are so sensitive now. It's unbelievable.
They forget that kids don't think about things the way grown-ups do.
Even teenagers
too.
And I think that they don't. You can't have your kid in the box, right? If your kid, the moment that kid gets out of the box, is going to experience stuff for the first time. That is crazy. You know, they need to be able to experience and think and see that people are living in other ways and things so that they can not be surprised as an adult when they go out in the world.
Right.
You know what I mean? You need to let it, you know, and books are such a great way to do that. And if a book is challenging, you talk about it and that's what it's for. You know,
that's it. It opens your mind to just the fact that more than your house and your school,
right,
and your grocery store exist and the people that you know.
Absolutely. It's just so frustrating. And I think it's tough on people that go out into the world having been protected that way.
And that's what both of these books that we chose do.
Yeah, you're right.
There's a whole different way of living and thinking. And I mean, think what Johnny experiences. And he adapts well and he has to struggle with some of it. But it's all, he enjoys his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And Sarah makes other people's lives better because she holds herself to this ideal, which is the only way she can manage to exist through what she's going through.
Yeah.
And that's not, beautiful. It doesn't have to be a Holocaust book or, you know, I went on the Donner expedition or anything. You know, your book, your adventure and the one I'm reading are wonderful because they also allow kids to see a new world, a different time, a different way of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Next up for us is Song Sung Blue.
Oh, okay.
All right.
On to Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond. Yep, I know nothing about
it.
Neil Diamond. I can hear the song.
Hugh Jackman.
Okay.
Playing the Neil Diamond imitator, and Kate Hudson.
He's playing an imitator? So it's not like
this is about a Neil Diamond imitator.
Ah.
And the woman that he is very early attracted to who plays backup and sings along with him. And it's a delight. I don't think it's been appreciated. And Kate and they both do their own singing. We know Hugh Jackman can, but Kate Hudson can play and sing and everything. And she is astounding. And the story is great. I can't wait to talk to you about it.
Wonderful. Looking forward to it. I like me some Neil Diamond.
Yeah, there you go. And I would say, is the next book Fearfully and Wonderfully
Made. Yes, the one after that. Mm-hmm.
This one, if people are reading along, it might be good to start now because it's a bit of a longer book.
Okay, got it.
Than like reading it in 2 weeks.
Okay, very good.
Or not. You could judge for yourself. It's just a heads up. It could be a little longer.
Excellent. Okay, good.
Dense, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see you in a couple weeks, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll almost have finished listening to this episode. Right?
You bet. We'll just tack the next one on the end of this one.
That's it.
I love it.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye, all.
Bye-bye.